This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And Rewind Away / Dynamite continues. It's always Rewind Away with Mr. Ting. And boy, if you're just joining us now for the Dynamite review, we just went through 40 minutes of news, an extensive rundown of the highlights of New Beginning in Osaka, starring Hirooki Goto and his two children, the New Japan Cup, Hiroshi Tanahashi's very ambitious match coming up in a couple of weeks, and his New Beginning in Osaka, as well as our discussion about Ricky Starks debuting in NXT on Tuesday night. And was there a graphic designed that said Rita Chatterton is All Elite? Apparently,
oh my gosh,
she was All Elite for a year, and none of us knew about it until Rita Chatterton disclosed this fact. All that can be heard on the XL edition of Rewind to Dynamite, which all members at all levels of the Post Wrestling Cafe receive, as well as your Q&A session that we will be doing at the end of the show. But to everybody that is tuned in, I know they have one thought on their mind. We love the cafe, but we live for the forum. Way, what's going on with our forum? This house that just got fumigated and have been told that we cannot re-enter the home. What has happened to the forum?
We were infected by something. Some bug has unfortunately destroyed the forum as we know it. But we have worked. Postmaster Robert Brocky.
I've done nothing. I want to make that very clear.
I've pretty much done nothing too. But Postmaster Robert Brocky has worked tirelessly to rebuild, whatever the rest of that t-shirt says. And he has now reopened forum.postwrestling.com. We are starting completely fresh, completely new. So if you've had an account in the past, we invite you to go back and create a new account. All past flags and penalties, your records are wiped completely clean. Okay. So we're all starting from, a clean slate here where we can rebuild our individual reputations. Go join the forum. Have fun. And discuss professional wrestling or whatever else you want. Fantasy leagues. I know that some of that stuff has been going on. Discuss the Post Wrestling podcast. Discuss what's going on in professional wrestling over at forum.postwrestling.com. It's completely
I will be
free.
Making my way over to the forum and chatting with all of you folks. So do head on over there. We also have a show out Tuesday night with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord with an extensive review of New Beginning in Osaka. That is there for you to check out now. And then on Thursday, we are dropping Ask Away, the non-forum edition of Ask Away. But you guys all came in strong. We had to close the thread because we got so many questions. So we will answer all of them on Thursday's show. So look out for that on the cafe. Then this Saturday, Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal are going to be tackling Grand Slam Australia. That's going to be late Saturday night. So Sunday morning, you will have that show in your feeds on the cafe. And then later in the day on Sunday, Braden and Davey will be doing a Vengeance Day show. So look out for that Sunday at around 4 p.m. Eastern time. They will be doing that show. And the final thing I want to promote is for all members at Post Wrestling Cafe next Tuesday, I'm doing a very special show with Braden Harrington and Jordan Goodman, where we are going to not only be reviewing the special SNL 50th anniversary show this Sunday night, we are also going to be doing a mini retrospective on the 50 years of Saturday Night Live. We're going to be naming our top five players in SNL history, top five hosts, top five sketches, and again, looking at the three-hour show that's happening on Sunday night. So that will be dropping on Tuesday. All members at postwrestlingcafe.com. So jump on board. $6 gets you 30 days access, and then just stay on board for life, and you will be getting shows such as this and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, which go live minutes after all of those shows each week.
Don't forget the return of MCU later. Well, they've actually been returning. They've been talking about Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which has been getting some really great reviews. But they will also be back next week to talk about Captain America, Brave New World. So you get all of that in your Post-Wrestling Cafe subscription as well.
Tonight we had a rare taped edition of Dynamite, which was done on Tuesday night as they are headed over to Australia. And so this took place at the HEB Center in Austin, Texas. And man, they had a great crowd on Saturday for Collision in Houston. And this crowd was even better. I thought this was one of the best atmospheres for an AEW TV show. And I don't know how long they were. This crowd was hot for the whole 2 hours. We sometimes talk about, oh, there was dips here or there. This was just an awesome crowd. And, you know, and sometimes when you are trying to like look for, you know, signs of like, you know, some like crowd sweetening, it's like this was also like a very like vocal crowd that you could see how lively they were for a lot of this. I just thought this show felt so I really just enjoyed this 2 hours of Dynamite. Like everyone just felt popular. It felt like a hot promotion tonight. I really thought that this company needs to be Texas only. Like this is their best state. Like forget, you know, when they go to Chicago or places in the Midwest, they do not miss when they go to Texas. Like they had the residency last summer there. You know, the big test is that they're of course doing the big all-in show there in the summer. But man, these crowds in Texas and these like 4,000 or 5,000 seat buildings, like these are great venues for them to be running. Like this was under 3,000 people, according to WrestleTix. But man, like you would not be watching this show and having any negative on the environment, the crowd heat, the size, none of it. It just was a huge assist, and it makes such a difference.
Saturday was similar, under 3,000, and it sounded like you know,
it was great,
like 10,000. Honestly, yeah, it's worked out really well for them. I'm hoping, like, where are they next week? Are they still in?
They're in Texas? Phoenix next week.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hope these sort of reactions are contagious. You know, especially like if they are continuing to run smaller places. It adds so much to the atmosphere, and I think the overall feeling and success of every single angle on the show.
First we got shots of the various performers on the show. Just shots of them warming up in the back. Max Caster comes out, cuts a promo about running Anthony Bowens and Billy Gunn out of the company. So who can survive the best wrestler alive? Hangman Page answers the challenge, chasing Max Caster on the floor and then getting him into the ring. And it was a quick squash. Buckshot Lariat in a minute 15. So Max Caster 0-2 in his open challenges. And Page just puts on his jacket, takes off. But there will be a lot more Hangman Page throughout the night.
Again, like what really just kind of stood out to me was the incredible atmosphere for all of it. You know, just a great way to showcase this sort of strong, silent Hangman character, which I guess in many ways does feel like a main character in AEW right now.
He did on this show. Like he was presented as like the big, like, you know, I'm not even gonna say like emerging babyface star, but more reaffirming himself in that babyface setting. Highlights of Ricochet and Swerve from last week. Ricochet compares himself to the Eagles. He's a winner. And Swerve's response was calling for an eye for an eye. And Nana cuts him off saying, you always make it personal. We need to focus on Moxley and the title. And Swerve says the last time he walked away from something regarding Hangman Page, I lost everything. So there was the threat that Ricochet could like blow up his car or something. Can't walk away.
Or worse.
This.
Yeah. I guess after losing your home, what more do you have to lose?
Yeah, that was his childhood home. What about his current home?
Oh, better keep those addresses private.
Yeah. Dude, the amount of times I've gone back to your idea of the scissors and the rope is just like, there'd be so much anger for that. But I was like, oh my God, it would just be like
so
just
awful.
Next level. Claudio Castagnoli, Pac, and Wheeler Yuta against the Undisputed Kingdom for the Trios titles. This match was incredible. It got 17 minutes of TV time, but that did include a commercial break in here. They brawl on the floor, and this was nonstop for the time that they had. Roderick Strong and Pac were just going at a crazy intensity. They triple team Pac, then the Death Riders get the advantage onto Strong, and they build up this hot tag to Adam Cole. This is like the biggest pop Adam Cole has gotten in months. It went insane when he got tagged. They're triple teaming Pac. Claudio's in. There's a dive by Yuta, and he lands on Strong's knees. So then the babyfaces attack with the high low. Crowd is just super hot. Kyle ends up with an ankle lock to Yuta, and Claudio grabs a chair. And Rick Knox, who's been starting to enforce rules of late, that's his new gimmick, quite foreign for an AEW referee, stops the chair. And then Cole and Strong super kick Claudio out. But as Knox turns his back to get rid of the chair, Yuta low blows Kyle, and Yuta pins him in 17 minutes and 15 seconds, but a really hot trios match, and the Death Riders retain.
Really, really excellent match. They managed to lift like an already really hot crowd to an even higher level. Like, this to me almost felt like the type of match that you would expect much later. Like, and I believe like on Saturday, I expected this to result in some sort of shenanigans so that they might be able to build to like a further match down the line. And I guess like it wasn't necessarily a clean finish, so you can still do that. But I almost felt like this would be sort of the end, one of the end destinations of, you know, this sort of trios division. But they're moving on, at least for now. You know, it's not to say they can't go back to it.
And as they attack the Undisputed Kingdom after the match, Daniel Garcia, Menard, and Cool Hand Ange ran down. The Death Riders retreated, and Garcia helped Adam Cole up. So probably going to get some involvement, too, with like some TNT title match coming out of this at some point down the road, too. Moxley and Shafir are backstage when Cope attacks them with a chair. They lock Shafir in a room, and they take bolt cutters to cut the handcuff from Shafir to the briefcase, and they run off with the briefcase.
They stole the briefcase, yeah. They locked, well, Roderick Strong was busy in that last match, but they did lock the man's wife inside this room. I guess he's, you know, he's kind of keeping, he's not involved in any of this stuff. It's you know, what she's doing in her own business and is her own business.
Yeah, but, for all of our focus on the Moxley-Renee dynamic in this AEW world, I don't think we focus enough on, yeah, Roderick Strong and Marina Shafir, as Roderick Strong is, like, fighting to the death here with the Death Riders in the previous segment here.
He needs to do his own, like, up-close interview with Marina Shafir where, like,
Marina!
Where, like, he could describe, like, hey, like, she's been brainwashed by this whole thing, and, like, you know, she hasn't been around to, like, cook, you know, lunch for the kids, or, like, put the kids to sleep or anything like that. So that's its own side story.
Well, Renee is with MJF, who states Texas is not a real state and Dustin is not a real man. He prayed to the devil, and the paint on his mangled face is going to hide is going to hide this man. Paige enters, tells him to get out. It's my interview time. And MJF says he smells like Jack Daniels. This isn't you. You don't have the stomach for it. You question every decision you make, and you're a joke. The punchline is these schmucks believe in you. And I'm going to beat Dustin Rhodes and move one step closer to something you've been unable to do, becoming a two-time AEW champion.
I thought a great promo from MJF here. You know, this was MJF at among his most serious and thoughtful and villainous. And I think it's a reminder that, like, man, like, still within this guy, despite, I think, the negative reviews for a lot of what he's done lately, still within him is potentially the best talker, at least as a heel, you know, in this business. And I'm liking the direction that they're taking this Hangman story. You know, it's MJF calling Paige's sort of like killer persona into doubt. Like, you know, you don't have the stomach for this. I've seen you second guess yourself, you know? So I'm curious to see how Paige answers that, especially while retaining his babyface status. So this is our main program. Like, it's not Jared. It's not Dustin. It's not Daniels. Those things are like TV, you know, programs. But our big main program for these two is something that's serious and I think very, you know, potentially strong in tone.
Yeah, the seniors division has done a lot for MJF.
They're good supporting cast. Well, I guess arguable in certain cases. Tonight was great.
Yes, we will get to that in a moment. But first, it's Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata, the Ops.
The ops. Yeah.
The ops.
You like it?
I'm not opposed to it, but it will have to grow on me a little bit. They were taking on John Cruz.
I feel like once a wrestling stable is named after like a term, it's no longer cool. And I don't think it'll really be said much. Like it's the beginning of the end for ops.
Yeah,
as a cool phrase.
It's certainly not a chantable team name. The ops. The ops.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. They were taking on John Cruz, Rosario Grillo, and Aaron Solo. Hook T-Bone Solo. And then Joe just no-sells Cruz's attack, chops him once, and hits a muscle buster in a minute 43. We should say that, you know, there are times that Collision certainly runs up the match total. I would imagine off the top of my head, this is probably the most matches that a Dynamite has ever had.
You could
it's
be right.
Typically in the 4 to 5 range is pretty much standard. I cannot ever remember them having 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 matches on this show.
You could be right. I mean, I guess how long?
Maybe well, we had some real short ones in here, too, between this and the Hangman win over Max Caster. Like, there were some real quick ones. I'm not even saying it as a negative.
This was basically like 3 squash matches at the same time.
It was, yes. And another to come, too, with Megan Bain. Joe gets on the promo. The promo was longer than the match. These are his brothers. Their answer to everything is violence. When we have a problem, we solve it by beating your ass. Just funny, because that's me and Wave's motto. And they are the ops.
Mm-hmm.
The ops.
Let me just start by saying I love that at least we have a name. You know, so many of these factions are just like Hook, Shibata, and like Joe. That gets very tiring to write down all the time. So
yeah, it's like Daniel Garcia and Matt Menard and Cool Hand Ange.
Yeah, well, technically, I think they're Daniel Garcia in 2.0. Are they 2.0. Still 2.0?
They've been calling them 2.0.
Okay, yeah. No, sometimes it's just a mouthful. It's nice we got something focused here. I like it. Like, great promo from Joe, talking for two people who don't really talk at all.
And they challenge Christian and the Patriarchy for next Wednesday, and that will happen with Christian, Kip Sabian, and Nick Wayne taking on the ops.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Renee interviews Jericho and Brian Keith. Keith lost to Bandido over the weekend, so Jericho didn't have to pay the bounty. But we don't yell in the learning tree, we learn. And tonight he collects the bounty himself by issuing a showdown with Bandido to meet him in the ring. Willow Nightingale is interviewed. She's going to Japan in March. And then Shafir just attacks her and chokes her. And that's the last we saw of Willow on this show. Maybe this is going to be this was her send-off to Japan. We're going to choke her. And Moxley jumps into the shot, stating that Cope is fighting fire with fire, and you're a dead man walking.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho comes out for the showdown. This was pretty hokey, but the crowd did get into it. They meet in the ring, the lights go out, and there's a spotlight, And then what made this was the crowd, because they go to take their steps into the corner and the crowd is counting the steps as they go to the corner. And then they turn, and before they can launch out of the corners, there is Brian Keith hidden on the floor grabbing Bandido. So they beat him down until the Outrunners run down. Then Big Bill comes out. He's going to cash in the bounty, but Hobbs runs down to stop Big Bill with a spine buster, leaving Big Bill decimated on the mat. So, again, crowd loved this. They made Bandido and Hobbs feel like, you know, babyface stars here against the Learning Tree.
Yeah. I think, like, in these two appearances, they've done a good job making Bandido feel like somebody that we should be taking seriously rather than somebody that just appears and then is kind of forgotten about. So I kind of like the dual spot much better on Saturday, when it felt like it was just kind of, it caught you off guard in the middle of the match with Brian Keith, rather than this coming out and just essentially it felt like a redo, and maybe not as compelling, but, you know, for as a way to put focus on Bandido, I thought it was successful.
Cope and Jay White show off the briefcase. This is like the most nondescript, bland briefcase we have ever seen in pro wrestling. Like, this thing is something like, you know, that would be in like my dad's garage with like his old tools in it.
What would you prefer? Bedazzled or what?
No, just something that I would believe even John Moxley might walk around with. Like, this looks like,
Believe that he would walk around with this.
This looks like a Fisher Price briefcase Oscar would play with.
If it was Moxley, I would actually find it more believable if it was like a reusable, like, burlap sack.
That would have been a lot easier to open than Cope attempted. So
yeah, I guess,
you know,
so.
Yeah. So Cope makes reference that I've carried two of these around in my career. Haha. And tonight, if you want this, meet us in the ring at the end of the night. And Jay White called the Death Riders D Riders.
Ah, nice.
Renee interviews Dustin Rhodes.
What's their tag team name? Huh? Come on, we got the Ops. We need something for Cope and Switch.
God, Jay White and Cope. Not a whole lot to work with their way. Edge Runners. Yeah, I don't know. Edge of the Blade. Adage. Ledge. End. Airy. Renee is with Dustin Rhodes. It's like, God damn it, I cut my promo last week and you've asked me to cut so many more. I only have got one promo in here. So he says that, MJF, you're going to find out why I'm the last of my kind, bitch. He was, yes, Okada. We'll get Dustin Rhodes and Okada on one of these, maybe next time they go to Austin.
He's taking that from Okada. He's taking the bitch from Okada.
Yeah. MJF and Dustin Rhodes, commercial free. Excalibur says, if there is anyone that knows what it's like to be dragged to hell, not literally, it's Dustin Rhodes. I paused to like contemplate what this meant. Literally mean to be dragged to hell? Like, can you literally do that?
Depends.
Like,
on
it's
your...
always figurative. No one has ever literally been dragged to hell. Like, it only exists in the figurative sense. And Excalibur had to
It depends on
clarify.
I think it depends strictly on your beliefs. You know, you'll find people that can swear that they've had some sort of like out of body experience that might have had them be dragged to hell.
Their mind has gone there. They have physically not gone to hell. That's like me saying I was once at Hogwarts.
Okay, I guess you'd be right if it was physical. Yeah.
MJF is in control, does the gold dust mannerism, but then gets hit with a power bomb. So Rhodes does the punches in the corner and a bulldog. Crowd was really hot for this. And they built this around several big near falls. And you have MJF leaping off the turnbuckle, stomping the arm of Dustin, which would be key to the match as he would weaken the arm. Goes for the salt of the earth, but it's blocked. And then teases the crossroads onto Dustin, who reverses it, and he hits the crossroads, and MJF kicks out. MJF comes back, catches him with a snap pile driver, goes to get a chair, wraps it around Dustin's wrist, and Bryce showing some discretion, removes the chair from Dustin's wrist. So then Dustin knocks MJF off the top turnbuckle into position for Shattered Dreams, followed by the final reckoning. I thought this was just a great near fall that they set up here. This crowd thought Dustin Rhodes was going to pin MJF. It was a great kick out. MJF then with a basic
arm. They just watched the Goto match and they're like, anything can happen.
You're right. Yeah, they would have seen it by at this point. The MJF does the arm wringer and hits the final reckoning, and Dustin kicks out of that. And right as he kicks out into the salt of the earth, he's fighting for the rope. But then MJF pulls him away into a crossface, and rather than tap, Dustin goes out at 11 minutes and 15 seconds. A great match that these two had. Like, Dustin, man, it's like it would be a mistake to be throwing this guy out every other week. But it's like, hey, we need you several times a year, and this guy just brings it, man. And he was like, they maximized everything in this match. They got such great reactions for these near falls, and I just thought both of them were excellent.
I think Dustin Rhodes is my favorite 55-year-old currently.
We're adding that category this year. There's so many that can fall at least 50 plus, okay? Because that's where this industry is going. There's going to be plenty of 50 plus wrestlers that are going to be going out and doing crazy stuff. I think that's a new category.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there are a lot of actually very good 50 plus wrestlers.
Well, that's why it's a category. We can have a debate.
How old is Adam Copeland? 50, right?
Oh, he's like, I'll double check. He's over 50.
Okay, anyway, maybe my favorite mid-50s wrestler might be Dustin Rhodes. He's just, I think, still very physically capable, maybe now more so than some of his prime years, in fact. And I think just, you know, like, even though, like, for many people, your body degrades over time, your promo ability, if you're still kind of like, you know, in practice, like, continues to get really good. But he's kind of both. Like, he's still enjoying, like, really good sort of, like, health, it seems like, you know, and great, like, sort of mobility, while at the same time, like, now carrying all this sort of, like, veteran promo ability within him. And it's just made him, I think, a very well-rounded, you know, performer that's still very, like, still holds up incredibly well among, like, this very young crop. Like, MJF is mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, half his age.
Oh, yeah.
More than half his age. Less than half his age. Whatever. Anyway, so the fact that they were
this guy was born when he was well into the Gold Dust run.
It's incredible. It's just a testament to Dustin Rhodes. But I mean, it took an incredible heel in MJF to be able to drag this great sympathetic performance out of Dustin. I thought these two had great chemistry, and I thought this match, like, exemplified like a masterclass in just simplicity. You know, you have a very clear hometown babyface that's already an aging veteran that everybody just kind of wants to see, like, do the impossible, and a heel that was, like, in his element. Like, MJF felt very good here, like, playing with the crowd, and the post-match was even better.
There's certainly, I feel there is going to be this groundswell of, like, the post-Goto effect of looking at all of these guys as...
Goto
is not 50. He's under 50. But yeah.
45. God, he's not that much older than us.
He's like, we're talking about him like, you know, he's like one step away from retirement. But, you know, like, watching that Goto match, like, I couldn't help but think, like, this is the whole goal that they are trying to get to with Jeff Jarrett. And not so much to win the title, but to get to a place where there's an audience that wants to believe he can win. And even if it's TV, if it's a pay-per-view. And I just think it's like, man, it's going to be really tough. Like, I would argue, like, I think they would have an easier case of trying to put Dustin in that type of a role.
Dustin doesn't seem like he's slowing down, though. Dustin doesn't seem like he's...
He just said the other day, he wants to go 3 more years or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And you can tell that story.
Like, none of these guys are retiring.
Isn't Jarrett, like... Can we assume that, like, what MJF said about this being a 1-year contract is actually, like, a 1-year, like, retirement run?
I think you're going with the idea that, like, this could very well be his last year.
Right.
They're certainly playing with that.
Yeah. But, you know, Jarrett is arguably the bigger star, maybe, of the two. And, like, the Owen is sort of, like, you know, designed for him this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have that story.
So he continues with the salt of the earth afterward when Hangman storms out, confronting MJF, going right up to him face to face. MJF goes to back away, but then attacks Hangman, and security is out. it was the same pull apart last week. They had Jerry Lynn there, and an Excalibur went out of his way to say Jerry Lynn is out here, and the fact he mentioned it, I cannot fathom Jerry Lynn being involved in this with MJF. Like, this guy, I mean, he had like massive neck surgery. He hasn't wrestled in like 12 years or something.
He might be used in like get attacked or something.
But, he's been used in angles too. Right. I guess you could do that. I couldn't imagine them doing more there. But I mean, it does kind of lean into this whole MJF thing. But Paige and MJF fight into the crowd. They fight up to the balcony and they're separated. This crowd is going nuts. MJF, as he is retreating down the stairs, takes this fan's beer and just pours it over this guy. I mean, just
so. Didn't he get in trouble like with that? Like when it hit a kid or something? Like
he took a drink and splashed it in the kid's face, and it turned out to be alcohol.
Oh,
this was a grown fan with his own beer. I mean,
and this is a fan that you could see in the camera background afterwards who high-fived his friend.
Part of me, like, I watched this and my thought is, like, there's going to be a time that a fan's going to punch this guy in the face. But I don't know, like, this audience, they're just like, this is the greatest thing ever that I just got my $15 beer spilt on me.
Yeah, it's like he gave that fan the best experience of his
wrestling
career.
These fans, they're going to go home. They're not going to wash this shirt ever. So MJF gets into the ring, says, I'm ready to go, but Paige sucks, and he's a gutless coward. So he thinks Hangman has been taken back, and Paige storms out of the back and just races to the ring. This was an awesome brawl. This was so great. This crowd's going wild. Again, like, this crowd, it got an A-plus in my book tonight, and they're going to have – it's time, Way. We're skipping the match. We're going to the face-to-face next week.
All right.
Talking.
Yes. The real main event. Yes. Hey, man, if the face-to-face is – if this was any indication of what that face-to-face might be, I'm really in for it because this feud has it feels like it's actually in full swing this week, and – it's presented already some great results that we've seen.
This was the best 20 minutes of MJF in months.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Like pre-Adam Cole. Like this was just it was a tremendous promo he had earlier. It was an awesome match, and the post-match could not have gone better. And now you have this match that feels like this could be the number two match at Revolution. Like, that's how hot this felt by the end.
Yeah, and I think so much of that is just the dance partner that he's had. Now, first of all, Dustin, I think, was a great dance partner for MJF.
Dustin was great in this match.
But Paige is also somebody who presents a very serious tone, you know, and now having, like, somebody like that to play off of is going to bring MJF at his most serious and, I think, most heelish.
Megan Bain ran through Maya World, catching her with multiple belly-to-bellies and then an F5 in a minute 54. And, of course, she had laid out Thunder Rosa on Saturday. This time around, Chris Statlander is walking out for her match and crosses paths with Megan Bain. So that would come into play after their match. And we go straight into Chris Statlander, Penelope Ford. That got about 9 minutes of TV time. Ford applies a hammerlock and then licks Statlander, who then grabs Ford by the mouth. She puts like her hands like right into her mouth and then stomps her. There's a sunset flip out of the corner by Ford, but then Statlander rolls out, hits a seated drop kick, big vertical, and Ford does the Matrix, landing a stunner, and then connects with a Poison Rana and goes for the handspring back elbow, misses, and Statlander hits the lariat and Wednesday Night Fever for the victory. And afterwards, Megan Bain returns, and Ford knocks Statlander to the floor right in front of Bain, who F5s her. So Megan Bain is just wrecking shop on all the women.
Yeah, and working with Ford, so maybe teasing some faction that probably needs a name as well.
Oh, man, they're going to be in overdrive over the next week. They got to come up with names here.
I think Penelope Ford has actually been very impressive since her return. You know, she's making some very clear advances with her in-ring ability, and she's just kind of gaining more and more confidence. Same with Chris Statlander, who has been on that very similar trajectory, but she hasn't had that layoff. So, like, every time she comes out, like, it feels like, you know, in-ring she's already at a certain level, but I think as a personality now, she has that confidence when she walks out there. Like, she feels very comfortable being this sort of babyface version of herself. The feud with Megan Bain is interesting in that they're both sort of like mirror images of each other. They're both powerhouses and you know, almost like sort of evil and good versions of each other. So I'm curious to see what that match will look like. assuming Bane will win that one, but I hope they have, like, you know, a real hell of a match. So, yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
And then it was time for our music video, and we just see the back of the Mercedes Moné puppet to Mercedes theme.
I bought that it was the actual Mercedes.
You thought it was Mercedes
here? Yeah.
Well, it was the back of the head was towards the camera, and they were really close in.
So good.
And so it's the puppet, and we cut to Harley Cameron, and she just does this incredible rap on Mercedes. And in my head, I'm just imagining, like, she introduced this puppet several weeks ago, and I imagine these are not the easiest things to manufacture, but just imagine the visual of Mercedes coming out and all these fans are just mocking her by utilizing this puppet that they could make a mint off of. And Mercedes is just livid at these puppets everywhere. Like, when Al Snow had head. Yes, exactly.
Now you would pay for this. Like you're saying AEW would pay for this.
Oh, I'd sell these. I'm fully on board with capitalism in a wrestling company. Right. These would probably not be cheap. I imagine these would be very tough to produce as well, these puppets.
Yeah.
This doesn't look like a cheap, I don't know where they would be mass producing these. But, I mean, this is just a great introduction here, but like this music video was incredible.
It was amazing.
Like, honestly, like, I'm just like, they should be finding every way to, they need to be monetizing this IP of Harley Cameron. The Harley Cameron IP is strong.
I feel like they will, coming off of this, like this,
like this song should be on Spotify tomorrow for everybody.
Right, yeah. Well, I wonder if there's a longer version of it. You know, I hope there is. But, you know, like Harley Cameron, I mean, I think, like, I certainly first heard of her when she was doing this sort of music stuff with, people on the WWE roster.
Shotzi and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was, like, you know, had, like, some musical things going on. Then she did QTV, and I believe she did, like, a similar rap type of thing during her days in QTV. Didn't really get any traction at all because nobody really cared about the feud. Nobody really cared about Harley Cameron. Now that we care about her, now that we really care about her and we really care about this feud, for her to bring out this talent on the Mercedes Moné theme song was just, like, it was amazing. It's like another one of those things, like, you know, like being a ventriloquist or like speaking Chinese, that like we all kind of like feel like we all knew she did, or at least like she's shown glimpses of it, but we didn't care at all. Now that she's in a feud that we care about, this, all of this is now so much more impressive.
So we go from this incredible music video to serious Harley Cameron, who calls Moné one of the greatest wrestlers alive. And there was a time that I didn't know how to wrestle. But there was also a time I didn't know how to sing. There was a time I didn't know ventriloquism. There was a time I didn't know how to speak Chinese. And thank you, Mercedes, for calling me a loser, because it inspired me to be better. And thanks to you, I'm going to win the TBS title in my home country. I don't want to ride the money train. I want to drive it. Feel the wrath. First of all, this 4 minutes was like, for any independent talent, this was like your audition tape that you should aspire to. This showed every range of Harley Cameron. And by the end, I'm not just hiring this woman. If I'm AEW, I'm signing her to whatever contract she wants. This is like one of the just greatest pieces of talent that they have come across, almost by accident. But she is just such a unique performer in a company that has a lot of them. And I just, you got to see all of it on display here in like 3 minutes.
Yeah. Well, listen, the key ingredient to all of that is her wrestling ability, and certainly her ability to tell a story as a professional wrestler. Like, again, she's shown that she has all these things, or she did show that she had all these things. But again, none of it almost really mattered until she was able to show that she was at least competent in ring and that she could carry a feud, which she has done. Now, all these, this extra garnish, you know, feels that much more special. But I agree with you. Like, this was like a great audition tape that I think ultimately, maybe her best talent isn't necessarily her, like, any singular thing. What she's shown is that she, as she mentioned, is a very quick learner, somebody who could pick things up if she dedicates herself and pick things up quickly, wrestling being one of those things, you know? So if she continues to advance at this rate as a professional wrestler, like, you could only imagine how far she'll go. So you see this and you're like, man, like, if you're like NIL or whatever, if you're a talent scout, okay, like, if you're Rita Chatterton talent scouting, you'd probably, like, you know, vouch for this talent for many years to come.
I just hope that we get Grand Slam Macau and she can demonstrate her Chinese for everybody. I didn't know she spoke Chinese until this promo.
She did it, like, as part of, like, a backstage segment. Now, I'd like to hear her speak a bit more at length, but she certainly speaks more Mandarin than I do. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, there you have it. So you will be our Chris Charlton if such a program presents itself. Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin against the Guns for the AEW tag titles. The Hurt Syndicate were, like, almost the most over babyfaces on this whole show. This is going to be a really tough go of it for their babyface opposition. But the crowd was going back and forth. Like, once they were solid into the Hurt Syndicate, but then we got into Guns Up, Hurt People, back and forth. And it did create a cool atmosphere for the match. This was, I mean, the furthest thing from the Hurt Syndicate against Private Party, where it just felt like, you know, it was Private Party's funeral. Lashley sends Austin crashing onto the ledge, and then Shelton dumps him into the crowd. Hurt Syndicate are beating on Austin, and Lashley finally runs his shoulder into the post, and Austin leapfrogs Shelton, tagging Colton. And Colton goes for his O'Connor roll, and it's turned into an ankle lock by Shelton. Austin stops that and hits a Famouser onto Shelton, and they set up for the 310 to Yuma. But Shelton runs over Austin and starts hitting German suplexes, and it comes down to Lashley slamming Colton, taking him out. And then it's the step-up knee followed by a Lashley spear, pinning Benjamin, pinning Austin in 11 minutes and 10 seconds and retaining the tag titles. I didn't think this was as diminishing as I thought this was going to be for the Guns, but I mean, it is very clear. Like, Lashley and Benjamin are kind of like your modern Road Warriors in this sense, and like, they are super over to this crowd because they dominate their matches, and that's kind of the thing. And it'll be tricky for babyfaces to be in the spot, but I do like where they're going here because Lance Archer and Brian Cage were the next ones out, and they make a lot of sense to be kind of their opposition for the next big title defense.
Having a strong Road Warriors type of team is better for your division as a whole than having parity across, you know, like, several teams and having a lot of strong guys. There are strong contenders, but it's not really the Guns' time. That said, though, I was actually quite impressed with them here. I thought, considering how beloved the Hurt Syndicate were, like, there was a lot of support for the Guns too, and I thought that they looked great actually working this sort of pace. Lashley and Shelton had, like, in a very short amount of time, have already found what makes them very special as a tag team. Like, just, you know, with the Bucks coming back, like, that's a big match. Like, you're in the position now where you can make big matches with the Hurt Syndicate.
Backstage, we go to Mariah May, who says that Toni Storm should have died last August, but you never knew how to write an ending. She says, I always did it better than you, and Storm is nothing without her, and you don't exist without me. I love you, Toni, because this is going to be a mercy killing. And with that, they performed a mercy killing on this segment, because boom, we just cut to break out of, like, mid-sentence here.
Yeah, I feel like I might have been expecting a little bit more for what maybe a lot of us are expecting to be the main event at Grand Slam, you know, on this edition of Dynamite. Like, we essentially got our go-home angle on Saturday, which was, like, fine, which was very good. But I would have expected maybe just slightly more, you know, for the more watch show.
Like, on this show, it was all about the Brisbane Brawl. Like, there was barely a mention of Okada Matthews beyond, like, the graphic and, yeah.
And
Ospreay. Yeah, that was, like, again, all of tonight was focused on the Brisbane Brawl. Like, that was kind of the focus for it. I mean, they showed the match graphics, but yeah, there was, and no Omega, no Ospreay on this show either. So we come back for the final segment with Cope and White coming out with the briefcase and ask fans if they want to see the title. And Cope bringing back an old favorite, Spike. Spike is back, and not Matt Heisen. And threatens to smash open the briefcase. So this case is still locked. And Marina has the key. They didn't pry the key away from Marina. They just chopped the handcuff off. So Cope's idea is he's going to take these nails and break open, like, what I can only imagine is, like, pretty resistant briefcase.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it's an idea. And he threatens to smash this briefcase unless Moxley accepts his challenge for Revolution. And I guess this is the breaking point for John Moxley, who comes out and warns Cope of the mistake he's making. I have left you have it wrong when Cope asserts that Moxley doesn't care about this title. He says, "I've left pieces of my soul in that ring for that championship. I'm its protector, and I will show you how much I care about that title at Revolution, because I'm going to break your neck." And he accepts the match. But Cope still strikes the case with Spike. And then the Death Riders come out, and they eventually lose the briefcase when Marina Shafir outwits them and grabs the briefcase, and they start stomping Cope. Cope spears Pac. There's a Blade Runner on Claudio, and then Moxley takes Spike, and he's going to attack White with it when all of a sudden Cope spears him, and White says that they will be put in the ground at Grand Slam. And that was the end. The mystery of this AEW championship continues. Or is it the championship in that briefcase? I guess that is our 4 month and counting mystery of the briefcase. I thought they went really hard on this this whole catch me if you can storyline throughout the show, but nonetheless, that was our thread throughout these 2 hours.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. You know, like there certainly wasn't anything that offensive. I would even say it was okay. It was okay. Like maybe not as great as maybe a world title program should be in AEW, but I didn't mind it. And I'm also not necessarily looking forward to Grand Slam because of this program. It's Tony Storm and Mariah May. It's Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega against Takeshita and Fletcher. I thought it was a fine way to end the show, but otherwise a very, very strong show given the content and also the crowd.
What are you starting Grand Slam with when you have that big surge from the NBA? Like we saw for the Hammerstein show in December, like just the difference it makes when you have that first quarter that a bunch of eyes will be on you, and you're probably... Like, I think you have to put your best foot forward. Yes, it's an audience that might not be sticking around regardless, but you definitely have to try. Like, what are you utilizing on this show to capture that audience?
Kate and I had this discussion on Saturday, and her thought was to put maybe the match with the biggest star power on it, and looking at maybe the participants, it might be the one with Cope and Mox, right? Brisbane Brawl. I more so thought Omega and Ospreay.
That's my thought.
It's the more spectacular match. Now, are they as recognizable names for like an audience that might be watching the NBA? It's arguable, it's debatable, but that to me is what I would personally start with, just because like I'm looking forward to that match more. But we're in agreement that Tony Storm and May would end the show.
What if Ospreay and Omega, the Dream Team, come out in basketball uniforms?
They did the Space Jam thing, you know.
They did. That's an oldie, but
it's
a goodie.
Not the most far-fetched, yeah.
Well, there you go. That is late Saturday night, and Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal will have you covered for that. So I thought this was an excellent Dynamite. Again, it was. It felt like a really great crowd in Austin, Texas, and I thought overall, like the Dustin MJF match was very strong. I love that trios match as well for the tag titles. And again, like they did, I thought that Saturday was a better overall push for Grand Slam. They really just focused on the one match on tonight's show. But I've got to say, by the end of this, and this is primarily from Saturday and tonight, I think they've done like a pretty solid job on these two episodes of making Grand Slam feel big. And I know that has certainly been a big bone of contention among people about this very derided show, depending on your investment in this show. If you are someone that was flying to this show or buying tickets for what you thought would be a stadium event, it will be interesting kind of what the fallout of this show is and what kind of a market Australia is for this company in the future. Because there's definitely been a lot of complaints over this, but I do feel these five matches, it's really hard to imagine that this is going to be a disappointing show, at least from what you're going to get in those 2 hours.
And again, just the five matches, just to kind of remind everybody, we have Mariah May versus Timeless Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World Championship, Ospreay and Omega versus the Don Callis families, Kyle Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshita, Kazuchika Okada defending the Continental Championship against Buddy Matthews, White and Cope versus the Death Riders in a Brisbane Brawl, and Mercedes Moné versus Harley Cameron. In terms of just like my interest, it's pretty strong for this one, you know, in a packed 2 hours. They have enough sort of narrative content leading to all of these matches to satisfy me. Even Okada Matthews, something as simple as like that little face-to-face the two did and whatever interactions the two did, was really more than enough, especially since much of this card, I think, is reliant on just the Australia reaction and the fact that you have several Australian talents, you know, or even a New Zealand talent in Jay White. Wrestling in front of a large audience near their homes or in their homes. So I'm Fletcher as well, of course. So you have sort of like potentially just hopefully a great atmosphere for the entire program that I'm looking forward to.
All right, there you go. Those were all of our thoughts on AEW Dynamite, and we will now move on to the next portion of the show that Wade directs.
I just laugh because somebody in the live chat, Derek, shout out to him. Team name, the Great White Cope.
Oh, done.
Ding, yes. Ding, ding. We have a winner, everybody.
There you have it. Derek did not let us down at all. Do we have feedback to get to, Wade?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to sign off for the freeloaders.
If not, it'll just be me and John talking.
Yeah, if not, we're just going to talk shit. So goodbye, everyone. If you want to catch Rewind to SmackDown, we will be live Friday night at 10 Eastern. Jump on board. Everyone cool is doing it. They watch live and they get the XL edition of the show. So that is it for us. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Race to savings at Menards and start updating your home today. We offer the largest in-stock selection of home appliances that are ready to take home today, including Criterion refrigerators, freezers, dishwashers, and laundry appliances. They're built to make your life simple, no matter how busy life gets. Criterion appliances are ready when you are. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings and all the great deals happening this week.
Save big.